I'm Fraser.
And I'm JD. Welcome to episode 3 of the 150 Marchers.
Before we kick off, a quick recap.
Last episode, we took you back to June 2020, where our search was up to 6 names. 3 definites: Jeffrey Wonsell, who we spoke to last episode,
Stuart Feather and Philip Rescorla. We do have 3 names yet to confirm: Bob Mellors, Aubrey Walter and Aubrey's partner David Fernback. Bob sadly passed away in 1996.
Now, from what we know, Aubrey and David are still together. We've reached out to Aubrey via his publisher, but have not had any success.
So at this point, we only had another 144 to go. Apparently.
But we were definitely making great strides and not pushing against the tide at all.
No, not at all.
As you might remember, we left episode 2 with 2 new names from the Times article.
We'd finally got a copy of the Times article, and in it were
Bev Jackson, aged 19, Mr. John Breslin, aged 41.
This episode, we're going to share with you what we discovered about John and Bev and our major breakthrough with the photos.
So, episode 3.
Here we go.
Homosexual behaviour between adult consenting males in private should no longer be a criminal offence.
This march was the catalyst for all the rights we've got now.
Why don't we know who they are?
In the vote on gay marriage. Gay marriage.
The eyes have it. The eyes have it.
Children need to be taught.
Charlie Craig's with us today.
Children need to be taught.
Our interview with Peter Tatchell.
Children need to be taught that they have an inalienable right to be gay.
Blackout UK.
Liam Hackett.
Phil Samba from Prepster. A brave step back then.
And we want to make sure that people know their names. Know their names. Know their names.
So this is us back in early July.
Okay, so we're back on numbers because this says that about 80 people were at this march.
I don't think we'll ever know how many people were ever at this march.
It's fine. We're aiming for 150 and we have like 5, which is more than I thought we'd get.
I hope we'd get more by now, to be honest.
Okay, well, we have time, Fraser. Okay, so it says there were 80 people at the march. What else?
So the Times article was another spanner in the works for the numbers, but Bev Jackson and John Breslin. What did we find out about the 2 marchers quoted in the Times?
Firstly, John Breslin.
Kid, do you want to know all about John Breslin?
Go on, tell me then.
Well, the most exciting thing, I guess, is that he was an actor, as it says in the newspaper.
But yeah, I know
also
that.
In this tiny little show that you might know called Doctor Who. And he played this guy named Captain James Monroe. And this is where you can't tell anyone, but I've never actually watched a single episode of Doctor Who, despite absolutely dying when I saw Billy Piper in Yerma.
So you've never seen it?
Well, yeah, I saw Yerma. Did you?
No, you've never seen Doctor Who.
No, I've never seen Doctor Who. I just didn't really know the fascination with it.
Well, between me and you, don't put this in, but I watched it once when I was about 7 and had to hide behind the settee because there was this like demon dog on it and it scared the crap out of me. So I didn't watch it again. And then I have watched it because I've had a couple of friends in it, like only the bits they're in because I don't get it.
Oh, babes.
I know.
And the other thing that I found out about him is that he was born in March. So he was a wee March baby on the 16th in 1929. In a tiny little city called Glasgow.
Oh, he's one of you.
He's one of me? What does that mean?
Scottish and gay.
I know, it's hard because a lot of English people are jealous of Scottish people.
It's true.
I know there's been huge debates about where I'm from, but I am Scottish and I'm a fan that he is also Scottish.
John could also speak 5 languages. He learned piano from famous Glasgow pianist Frederick Lamond, and he went on to train in acting at RADA.
Not only was John an established actor, but he also worked as a rehearsal actor and dialect coach for Gregory Peck, Peter Finch, and Peter O'Toole, to name but a few.
If you check him out on IMDb, he worked pretty solidly through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, with his very last appearance being on Doctors in 2006.
But we weren't going to be able to speak with John, because at the age of 80, in 2009, John passed away in London.
Although all of this stuff was really interesting, didn't really give us a feel for who John was. And then we came across this clip of John Breslin from BBC Two's The Late Night Lineup. And as you'll probably agree, John was quite a guy.
John? May I say something here? The implication of this discussion seems to be that it's perfectly easy and normal and quite relaxing to say in Britain nowadays that you're homosexual. Though one would laugh about it. We send ourselves up like mad privately homosexuals. No one laughs at themselves more than homosexuals privately. But you seem to be assuming that people go out and everyone knows they're homosexuals. Most people, the vast majority of people, do not know the vast majority of homosexuals as homosexuals. These homosexuals go home to their brothers, their fathers, and sometimes their children. I know lots of homosexuals with wives and children, by the way, usually seeking a divorce because they married far too young, a tragedy entirely overlooked by dramatists. Quite commonplace. I know at least 12. There are probably about, roughly, I should think, 2.5 million male homosexuals in Britain, plus about 2 million female homosexuals. This is fact. These are the most conservative estimates. People haven't the faintest idea this is true. All their ideas come from caricatures of music hall comedians doing this all the time, you know what I mean? They think that is a queer, and that is the totality of a homosexual. Instead of a human being who has passions, feelings, who needs tenderness and affection, and companionship with another person to whom he's attracted. Exactly as a heterosexual does. But as long as only a certain type of homosexual, with superficial characteristics of the rather feminine type, this should be irrelevant. It shouldn't matter a damn with your feminine, masculine, these are all relative terms. But as long as only that type is presented, the type who seems as though he will always turn the other cheek, always accept the cheap snides and laughs and jeering of society, then the bully boys of society, of whom there are far too many nowadays, in all fields, will use these people as an easy object of laughter, as they used to use Jews, and as they still sometimes use black people and Pakistanis in the north of England, until they know that ordinary homosexuals can stand up in public and say, I am a homosexual, so what? With as much courage and relaxation as a heterosexual can. Are you afraid ever to say I'm heterosexual? Have you ever been in your life? How can you be afraid to be heterosexual? Because most people are, 90% of people are. But homosexuals are nowhere near the situation where the ordinary homosexual, doctor, lawyer, docker, labourer, politician, I know many of all these people, churchmen galore, people still are led to believe that homosexuals are ladies' hairdressers, you know, and rather genteel barmen and so on and so forth. As long as they believe that, they'll think they are easy meat for jokes. As long as they know that the average homosexual is exactly superficial like the average heterosexual, sometimes a hell of a lot more masculine, in fact, not that that matters. As long as they know that, then they can't attack homosexuals in the way they still do in Scotland particularly, where the law hasn't changed. The last two countries in Europe where you're still not allowed to go to bed with a man you love are Scotland and Northern Ireland. Anywhere else in Europe, they have become civilized in that respect, and they're still waiting for it up there.
I mean, I've watched that clip so many times since, like, you found it, and it just never ceases to amaze me, like, how brave he was to sit on that TV show and to say those things and be so open and honest, especially in regards to Scotland. Like, Scotland has become progressive, but, like, I think it's sort of making up for a past.
If you remember back in episode 1, we told you how the homosexual law reform didn't cover Scotland until 1980.
But yeah, I just think it's really amazing.
Also, it said it was recorded on the 4th of December, so that's a week after the march.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, if this is the first, I don't know, maybe, I don't imagine he was out, him being at the march. Was that his first kind of outing publicly? And then, you know, how did he end up on this show? Did they, maybe they read the article in the Times and got in contact with him or his agent and said, right, you've made this statement.
From the quote in the paper to then the quote from the TV show, like, I feel like that's not a man who's just out. That's a man who's, like, confident in who he is. And he's, like, not afraid to...
I suppose when I say out, I don't mean out in his closer circles, but I mean projecting that forward and making an announcement. Him making that statement at that march is a little bit like him putting a tweet out. He's sort of going beyond his sort of like inner circle or the people he's who know him closely.
Did Geoffrey know who he was and recognised him and was like, oh, that's a guy that I've seen? It's these things that I wish we knew, but I understand that we don't.
I can't think of any out gay actors in 1970. I've Googled and I can't find any.
But like, we also don't have, like, a full chronology of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, Apple TV did that wonderful Out in Television Visible. You watched that, didn't you? About sort of, like, the history of queerness in America on TV and the representation. And I feel like, again, we're behind. And, like, we should also have one. Because, like, when were Carry On films out?
Carry On films, the 60s. Well, it's the idea of being out, though, isn't it? So if you look at Kenneth Williams, yeah, the men and actors at that time, they weren't, there was the common knowledge that they were homosexual, but no one outwardly ever said, I don't think, I'm a gay man. So it feels like John Breslin, you know, in that news article and on this news panel might have been one of the first to actually acknowledge his homosexuality.
But I mean, he also says, Fraser, the acting profession is one of the few that tolerates homosexuality. And in 2020, that unfortunately is not as true as we'd like to think. You know?
Clearly, yeah, one, it wasn't true then, clearly, and also it isn't true now.
Yeah, and that's not a criticism of the industry, but it's a fact. I mean, I have friends who have met with agents who have categorically told them, don't come out, you know? In a world where they cast people off of Instagram followers and Twitter followers, where your life is more open and on display to people, they're actively telling young actors not to be true to themselves. And I think that that's damaging. And it's the same with sort of writers, like, you know, branding yourself as a gay writer, then you can't write anything else. Yes, you can. You can write whatever you want, but like you can be a gay writer and have queerness at your heart, you know, and as the main mode of transport that you take to tell your stories. The problem isn't, and it makes me really sad, you know, that the industry thinks that the world still won't love you as much as it could. That's essentially what it is. That's what they're saying. I think I just want someone to that's listening, and if they've had that conversation with an agent, that like know that there is a world where they can be who they are privately and still achieve great things on the stage or screen. And it doesn't, the two aren't mutual, and one doesn't have a negative effect on the other. That's all. Because people have done it and people will continue to do it. Don't hold things inside you just for that extra pot of cash. Yeah. Because if you're destined to be an action star, then you'll be an action star, whether you're gay, straight, bi, trans. So we're really sad that we can't get to talk to John. We tried to get a hold of someone who knew him, but with no luck.
I even tried contacting the BBC's doctors team to see if they could help us track down John's old agent. So we're so pleased we found this clip because it really gives us a feel for John and everything he stood for at that time.
Especially me. Because he's Scottish, and I'm Scottish too. Big surprise, listeners, but I am. So John Breslin, we would like to thank you for marching on that day and for sitting on that TV show and saying what was in your heart.
Now, for the other name in the Times article, Bev Jackson.
Around the time we were emailed a copy of the Times article by Philip Rescorla, we were both on our second read of Stuart Feather's book, Blowing the Lid. Now, we hope you've managed to grab a copy from Gage the Word or one of the other awesome gay bookshops around the UK.
Our plan is to put up a wee Twitter thread of the books we've been referring to with links on where to buy them.
Bev Jackson is mentioned in Stuart's book, and this is how she's described. Among these campus activists were Aubrey Walters' lover David Fernback and their friends, who were also students at the LSE, Bill Halstead and Richard Dipple, a member of the Albany Trust.
The one woman among them, Bev Jackson, later ran for LSE College office with the slogan, Bev the Les for Prez. All were present 6 days later, along with a dozen other men at the first meeting of GLF.
The following week, more women turned up, as well as men, and a leafleting campaign was organised. I joined a week later.
What a slogan.
No.
I honestly think it is quite inspired, and it also allows me to share something with everyone, is that I am addicted to rhyme. And despite the fact that we've done three of these episodes and I have never actually rhymed once in the episodes, I will blame Fraser for that because he has taken all editing control of everything and he gets rid of all of them.
That is such rubbish. I can assure you, having listened to your voice for hours on end editing, you have never once rhymed when we've been chatting.
You are very lucky to have listened to my voice for hours on end. And
yeah. It may be true,
but I blame you. I don't know what to do. Finally, I got one in. And I hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did.
Was that a rhyme? I'm not sure. Anyway, from the description in Stuart's book, it's clear that Bev was a really brave woman and, you know, a real character. And we figured she'd be a really important person to speak to about this time, as she probably have lots of stories to share. And we also learned from Andrew Lumsden that Bev was on the Queering Steering Committee at the first GLF meeting he went to.
after reading about the march in the Times. In other research on Bev, we discovered she'd also written a book, A Month with Starfish, volunteering with refugees on the Greek island of Lesbos, and it gets great reviews.
But apart from the quotes in the Times article, there is little about Bev and her experiences of the march, and we were really keen to speak to a woman who had been there.
However, as you'll remember from the end of the last episode...
I've done some research into Bev.
Right.
She's an interesting woman.
Oh, that's good.
She's the founder of the LGB Alliance. If you aren't an active member of the LGBTQ plus community, you might be asking yourself, what does it matter that Bev is a founder of this organisation? So we want to say a couple of things.
We won't be going into what the organisation stands for, because the 150 Marches podcast is a celebration of the 1970 march and a celebration of the LGBTQ plus community. Our number one goal was, and still is, to celebrate the seeds which grew into a giant oak tree, giving us the rights we have today.
We personally feel that the ideas the organisation Bev is a part of run counter to that celebration. One of the GLF's chants at that march in 1970 was all power to oppressed people, and we stand with them in that.
But Bev was at the march in 1970, and however much we personally disagree with her current organisation, we wanted to approach her like anyone else, to hear her memories of the march and to thank her on the podcast for her participation at that time.
We wanted to do this because, as we know from the Times article, she was at the 1970 march. That is a fact, not our opinion. And as we do not feel that this should be erased from that history, regardless of our feelings about where she is now, we attempted to make contact with her, to ask her about, and only about, the subject in question, the march in 1970 and her involvement in it.
After several written exchanges between ourselves and Bev, in which we emphasised that all we wanted to talk to her about was the march in 1970, she insisted that she would only talk with us if 50% of her airtime be dedicated to her sharing the reasons she felt she needed to set up her new organisation. As we did not and would not agree to such a condition, we've therefore been unable to speak with her about the march in 1970 and her experience of it. Bev Jackson was at the Highbury Fields march in 1970. She is quoted in the Times article. She was there. She had a hand in the GLF. She and several others began a movement, and for that, we are thankful.
But we do not endorse or stand by her current organisation. The LGBTQ plus community is, and has always been, made up of so many glittering, colourful and diverse personalities. And even though in 1970, all of those letters might not have been used in the way we use them now, people from the communities those letters represent were present at the march in 1970, fighting for freedom for all. That too is a fact. All of those letters, like back in 1970, are needed if our rainbow is to shine as brightly as it does and can.
In our last episode, we spoke to Jeffrey Wonsall, the journalist from the Times who was at the march, and he said we could contact the Times to inquire about the possibility that there may have been a freelance journalist at the march who took the photos Andrew Lumsden was sure that the Times have.
And such is life. It's not what you know.
Good job with us too.
And as I was proper horny for finding out more about these photos, I was very happy when Jeffrey allowed me to fuel my obsession by putting us in touch with the current assistant editor of the Times, Ian Brunskill. I should also add that in last episode, I kept smashing together Andrew's job as a financial writer for the Times into the Financial Times. He was a financial writer for the Times. My bad.
Your bad.
Exactly. So, we sent Ian an email, and much to my excitement...
Call me. We've got an email back from the Times.
I'm going to take back all the mean things I've said, if any, about the Times. And I think that that's really kind of them to do that.
It is really nice.
We'd cracked it. We'd got the photos. And not only that, we had another name. The man who took them.
John Pridmore. He took the photos, according to Ian Brunskill, and he was a freelance photographer at the Times.
That's two Johns for this episode.
I know.
So myself and Fraser would love to say a huge thank you to Jeffrey Wonsell, Ian Brunskill, Michael John Jennings.
That's the third John.
That's a daddy joke. And Luke Nestor at the Times for sorting out not only access to the photos of the march, but also to the other name.
Now, we've tried to find out more about John, but as yet, we've had no luck. John Pridmore, if you're listening, or anyone that knows him or may know him, please get in touch, as we'd love to hear about your experiences at the march. So, we were now up to 9 names. 9 names in 2 months.
But back to the photo. Now, I know I was excited, but I also knew who would be even more excited than me.
Andrew Lumsden.
Exactly. Andrew was the one who first alerted us to the photos that he believed were taken, but didn't appear with the article in the Times. We knew that he'd be excited to see them, so we arranged a Zoom call to tell him the news. So basically, when you first emailed us way, way back when, you mentioned the Times article and you mentioned that there was photos alongside that and that they were charging gastronomical prices to get a hold of the photos.
Yes.
We have the photos.
Well done.
Thought it would mean a lot to see them again.
Thank you very much. That's very thoughtful of you.
So I'm going to share my screen. Can you see that?
Yeah, I can.
Great. So this is the first one.
In photograph one, there's a man with amazing curly hair holding a piece of paper and reading from it. And there are people around him holding candles. And there's a woman in a great jacket. And we can tell it's great, even though the photo's in black and white.
Oh, look, that's Warren Haig, who's reading from the sheet of paper.
Okay. And who's this? Do you know?
No. I would have done long ago, but no, not immediately. The next person could be Mary McIntosh, who's the late Mary McIntosh.
Yes, she has a beautiful coat on.
Well, she dressed beautifully. She was a very radical woman indeed, but also liked partying. On the far right, that's... Mick Belson. Mick Belston. So that's Mick. So that's those so far.
We have this one, which is more of a crowd.
Photograph two is more of a tight crowd scene. The candles are still visible, but it looks like a bit of a scrum. And there are two men having a conversation, which others seem to be listening in on.
That's great. Now, that could be Aubrey with the big mass of hair and a balloon beside his left ear. Wearing glasses, it could be. I thought I saw possibly Stuart. I'm not sure if he had long hair when I very first met him, but he very soon did. Beautiful long blonde hair.
Okay.
Very handsome and with long hair. But as we know, he was there and...
Let's look at this one. I think, yeah, this one's just more of...
Photo three is taken at the front of the march and looks back on the people marching. The man with the curly hair from photo one is at the front. To his left, there seems to be a man taking a piss by a tree. Even marchers need to wee.
That's great. Well, that's Warren Haig again. That one.
I just love the line of people and the torches. I think it looks great.
It is good. That somebody seems to be having a pee against a tree.
Oh, wait, next one. Do you know who this is?
The lady with the fab jacket is back in this one. There's also a very tall man holding a balloon, which looks like a penis, or could be resembling a penis. There are some other men around him smoking, and one guy is a proper wee cutie.
All these wonderful faces. God, no. I know perfectly well who the guy with the little pencil moustache. I wish I knew who he was. I don't suppose he went away alone that evening.
And then we have...
Photo five is outside the Cock Inn, just outside Highbury and Islington tube station, where the marchers met before and after the march. The man with the balloon from the previous picture is there, and it looks like he's speaking with two policemen.
Behind, that looks as though it might be the Cock Inn.
Yeah, we thought that. And these are two policemen?
So those are cops. I think that's holding the balloon, that's Oh, it's so many years. I know who that is. Bugger. Anyway, no, I better not start making inaccurate guesses.
That's okay. And then the last one is this one.
And this last one is a wide crowd shot. Maybe around 25, 26 people are visible. Lots of men with long 70s hair and cool clothes. Some of the faces are easy to make out, but others are obscured or just not in focus.
Again, it looks like lots of people are there. So we have a little group of people over here.
Yep. There looked to be only about 25 people in that particular gathering. Well, there seemed to be about 24 visible, but then there could be quite a number behind that, couldn't there?
Yeah. So is that Stuart?
No, that's not Stuart. Stuart was very pale blonde.
Okay.
So I don't think he's hidden behind that kind of sausage balloon. Aren't they lovely? That's stunning. Well, I think that's as far as I can go with any confidence.
Being able to share these photographs with Andrew was excellent. After all these years, he no longer had to wonder what the march looked like, the march that he read about in the Times and that spurred him on to join the GLF. So thanks again to the Times.
Hooray!
And we were really excited to get these three new names. Warren Haig, Mary McIntosh and Mick Belston, who we'll be looking into in a future episode. We also hoped that if we did get an interview with Stuart Feather and Philip Ruscola, that we could show the photos to them and maybe they'd recognise even more faces and give us more names to add to the 12 we now had. So only 138 to go, depending on who you ask.
And then there was a bit of a lull.
Yeah, the pubs had reopened. My puppy was even more batshit crazy and needed even more walking. And then this happened.
I thought John Breslin had passed away.
Yeah, he has done.
Why do we have an email from him in our inbox?
Unfortunately, it wasn't as JD thought, that maybe we got it wrong and John Breslin was in fact alive.
No, because what I didn't know is that Fraser hadn't just been in the pub and walking the dog.
That's not a euphemism.
It is if you watch Dawson's Creek. He'd gone rogue and sent some of the Twitter messages with regards to John and got a reply from Toby Haddock saying that John Breslin has a nephew who is a journalist, also called John Breslin, who said one of his family members would be happy to talk to us, which we were made up about.
Yes, so we emailed to set up an interview with John's family members and waited.
And whilst Fraser was in the pub, socially distanced, he tells me,
"Hey, sorry to bother you.
Sorry.
But I've just checked the email and Stuart Feather and Philip Ruscola have confirmed and they want to talk to us."
Yes!
We were finally going to get to talk to two marchers. No journalists, but two men who went to the march. And in episode 4, that is who we talked to.
We also received some other news we weren't expecting.
JD, guess who's back?
If you say Eminem, I'm going to slap you through Zoom.
No, the GLF. They've reformed.
The 150 Marchers was written by Fraser Flintham and JD Stewart and edited by Fraser Flintham.
Do you know anyone who attended the march, anything that we've talked about that raises any kind of exciting flags for you, please get in touch with us.
You can find us on Twitter at 150Marchers. Our DMs are open, so please slide on in.